Hello there. This is Lois Richter. The program's called That's Life. And for the next 4 weeks, we're going to be talking about information that you will need to make your decision on how you are going to vote for or against the Covell Village Project. First off, let me say that this is not a call-in program. And then I'll tell you how we're going to work this. The first week, I wanted to get some of the basic core questions out there so that you have the information that you need to know where the city is right now, what the status of things are, what some definitions of terms are, what the rules are that the city has to follow, what the city requires of development, what the city's obligations are for growth, what the status is of our utilities. I give them a whole series of questions. And Bill Emlin and Catherine Hess went through and pulled together a bunch of information, and Catherine is here to give us the scoop on what the status is with the city. Then next week, I will have a proponent of Covell Village here, Mike Corbett, and I will be asking him questions about his project, using this information as basis for some of those questions. And then you'll get to hear him talking about why he thinks you should support that. The third week, I will have an opponent of Covell Village, and I'm not sure which person it's going to be, so I won't give you a name yet. I'll tell you next time. Talking about what they see as the problems with this project and what their suggestions are for either modifications or alternative projects. And then, because I assume that week two and three we're going to have different interpretations of different things, on the fourth week I'm going to have someone to answer the questions that came up during the second and third times and get the straight answer as to what did this really mean, what is, you know, differences of opinion, what is that kind of stuff. And I don't know who I'm going to ask for that because I don't know what the questions are going to be. So that's the process. Wow. That's going to be a heavy 4 weeks. But I'm Lois Richter. The show's That's Life. Every Thursday at 1 o'clock, we are going to have information. This week, I am very, very pleased to have with me my guest, Catherine Hess. Hello, Catherine.
Hello.
And you have all your homework?
I have documents. I have pieces of paper. I'm hoping the microphone won't pick up all the rustling.
Oh, we don't care. Rustlers are fine. It's not a problem. So what do you want to start with?
Well, first I should probably let people know who I am.
Yes, that's a good idea for those people who don't watch the city council meetings.
My name's Catherine Hess. I'm the Community Development Administrator in the Community Development Department, which at the City of Davis, a fancy term for planning manager. I am a senior manager in the planning division for the city. And in addition, as of the last 18 months, I've been the staff planner processing the applications for Covell Village. So I'm the one who's written the staff reports, drafted some of the documents that were approved by the City Council, and I have a fair amount of knowledge of the proposal and our city's background requirements. I am not the only staff person who's been working on the applications and the concepts. We've had support from every other department, Parks and Community Services, Public Works, Fire, Police. It's been a very team review effort, and there may be questions that I can't answer today because they're technically something that goes somewhere else, but I can do a broad brush review.
Okay, and so if I have extra questions, I'll save them up and find the right answers from the right people.
Absolutely.
And Bill Emlin was going to be with us today, but was called away and is unable to be here. And Bill Emlin is?
He's the Community Development Director. He's my boss, and he's the one who's directly responsible for all the operations in planning and building.
Okay, great. So having established credentials here, let's talk about the status of the city. Now, a lot of things come up when we start talking about a new development, mm-hmm. any new development, Covell Village or any other new development. And one of the things that comes up is, does the city have to grow? And why and how much and that kind of stuff.
And what if we don't?
Yeah. So that's my basic question to you. I know there's something called a pass-through agreement. I'm not sure if that has anything to do with what we're talking about.
It did.
But can you explain what the city's legal, technical requirements are and what obligations the city has made?
Sure. State law says that every city, and I'm going to use the term city because that's what we are. It also applies to counties. It applies to the combined city and county of San Francisco. But every city has to have land available to accommodate its fair share of growth. The state of California says that we're going to have X number of new people, X number of new housing units statewide, and the shares of those need to be allocated to each individual jurisdiction. That allocation is done by the local council of governments. In our area, it's SACOG, the Sacramento Area Council of Governments. And what they do on a five-year cycle is say, for the next five-year period, every jurisdiction has to accommodate X number of units.
And does every jurisdiction have to accommodate the same amount, the same numerical amount, or the same percentage amount, or how is that?
Or something different from that. Every council of government has a slightly different way of allocating the units. SACOG did its last allocation in early 90s, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And at that time, they were given the number from the state. State said, okay, this region needs to have X number of housing units. And it's not just a total number of units. It's broken into income categories. Mm-hmm. So we've got low income, moderate income, above moderate income. What SACOG did during that last cycle was look at the general plans for the various jurisdictions, added them all up, and it came pretty darn close. So they were able to say to Davis, to West Sacramento, to Woodland, okay, we expect you to have X number of housing units. Shouldn't be a problem because that's what you were also planning.
So this was based on the plans in place at the time that they looked at it. And for Davis, that was what document?
That was the general plan. The 1987 general plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the 1987 general plan, if you can refresh our memories, was it a percentage or was it a fixed number? What was the?
It had a vision for a number, but more importantly than that, what it had was a map. Mm-hmm. And our general plan, like the general plans for other jurisdictions, has a map in it that says this is where the residential development's going to go, this is where the commercial development's going to go, this is where the neighborhood centers are, this is where the schools and the parks are. And if you take that map and if you take the density formulas that are also included in the general plan, you can say, okay, over this period of time, we would expect to have X number of additional units, X number of additional people.
Okay, so we're talking the zoning that was in place in the 90s.
The general plan. It's a slightly different layer from the zoning.
Okay, the general plan that was in, mm-hmm. that the SACOG looked at, the general plan. The general plan had been amended a few times by then. I assume they took the amended versions?
I don't remember, and I wasn't part of that process itself.
Yeah. But so what did we finally come up with that Davis is committed to doing as far as growth?
We have demonstrated that we can meet our fair share, mm-hmm. for the current cycle.
And the current cycle ends when?
Ends 2006.
Okay.
So we've got a requirement from SACOG, or a requirement under state law, mm-hmm. as interpreted by SACOG, that says you've got to have enough land available to meet this certain housing need. And that includes a certain number of multifamily or low-income units, a certain mm-hmm. number of moderate-income units, a certain number of above-moderate-income units. And we went to the state earlier this year and said, here's every single parcel that we have that's zoned that allows housing, and it's enough to meet the numbers. And we got a letter from the State Department of Housing and Community Development that says, yes, you've demonstrated that you can accommodate your fair share during the current cycle.
Through 2006.
Yes.
Now, it said the land must be available. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that it has to have been developed.
In fact, it's got to be vacant land.
Okay, the vacant land available would take us through 2006.
Yes.
Now, the vacant land available, if it were all developed, would no longer be vacant land.
Correct.
And therefore, we would not have any vacant land to develop for the next cycle, which starts in 2007.
In that sense, we get penalized because we actually build the housing. What we don't know at this time is what our new requirements are going to be. We don't know for sure when we're going to get those numbers.
Okay.
There have been several previous years where the state has said the entire housing cycle, the entire fair share cycle, we're going to just let it slip a year, in part because the state didn't have the funds to do the administration on its side. The councils of governments didn't have the money from the state to do it. They just put it all off a year. That's a very real possibility whenever the state has fiscal issues. The other thing is that there has been legislation introduced in Sacramento every year for a lot of years to change the cycle to fix it. As you note, there's no requirement that units actually get built. That's something that other people have noticed and says, well, you know, it's just a hollow exercise. We're not getting any affordable housing. We're not getting any housing in general. Maybe there's another way to look at this whole thing.
So in Davis, the land that was the currently empty, the empty at that time land that was used to meet this requirement, has that land been built upon?
A lot of it has.
Okay. So do you have any idea what percentage hasn't?
I don't. The other thing is they've made some recent changes to state law and how you measure your capacity. And we have the ability now in our zoning, and we've seen a little bit of it, for people to add units downtown, tear down an existing one-story structure and put up a three- or four-story structure with housing.
And does that count towards our SACOG commitment? Because it's not land. It's actually occupied.
I think the changes in the law would allow us to count those more.
Okay. So as of 2006, when this cycle runs out, if they were to do a similar thing and need the similar amount of growth that they did last time, do you think that we would have enough land? We would need more land, wouldn't we, to meet that requirement, if there was a similar requirement?
If we were going to meet it the same way we'd met it before, we'd need more land. Which means
we'd need to expand the city limits, or we would need to change some land that is now called commercial and turn it into housing, or we would need to do something to have more city undeveloped housing land.
Or we could, again, use that core area concept of taking existing developed land but building it an assumption that you could also put housing on it, either in addition to what's there or as a replacement to what's there. If you look at our neighborhood centers, you look at our downtown, there's some definitely some areas where you could see second-story housing.
Right.
Whether that's enough to meet our fair share is not clear. We'd have to look closely at the definitions.
Right.
There may be some case law by then. I don't know. People, I'm sure, think they're writing it very clearly when they write legislation, and sometimes when it comes to implementation, you're scratching your head.
Okay. All right. So that answers the basic question that we don't know.
We don't know. The other part is, well, what happens if we don't meet our fair share? Or we can't demonstrate that we can meet
our fair share? We've already met our fair share through 2006.
Right. We're in good shape now.
Okay. And so if we... If we had the land, but we refused to, if we had the land available zoned as housing, but we refused to allow people to build on it,
they'd probably figure it out.
Well, yeah, I mean that would make sense,
but especially since we've got a lot of state employees living in Davis.
Okay, so just refusing to build on things is probably not a technique that's going to do anything.
It'd be tough to pull that one off.
Yeah, okay. So, do we have plots of land? Now, see, I'm getting a little confused. I've got in my mind the map of the general plan and the city limits are mm-hmm. what's controlling here. So the city limits are what the city has to work with.
Within the incorporated jurisdiction.
So does the general plan say anything about things outside the city limits? In other words, are there little peninsulas that are undeveloped that are set aside for a certain thing in the general plan, even though they're not part of the city? Or does the general plan only deal with the city?
For the most part, the general plan only deals with the city.
Okay.
It recognize our map for the general plan recognizes some existing development that's outside the city.
Right, like
University of California, for example. Benning Tract,
Willow Bank,
El Macero. Yeah. Those are shown as residential developed areas on our general plan map. It doesn't mean that we have regulatory authority over them necessarily.
Right. But SECOG would look at that and go, it's developed.
SECOG would look at that and go, it's developed. The other thing that SECOG would say, suppose somebody decided to double the density in El Macero.
Uh-huh.
That would go to the county's credit for fair share, not the city's, unless we were to annex it.
Because it's not part of the city.
Correct.
Okay. Now, that was the 87 general plan.
Which was updated in 2001.
And the 2001 general plan has not been looked at by SECOG yet, but that's the new document they would look at for the next cycle, correct?
We've asked SECOG how we think they're going to do the allocations. And at this point, they don't know.
Okay, so they don't know. Is the difference between the 2001 general plan and the 87 general plan large as far as the amount of area the city plans for?
Well, one significant change is that the 87 general plan did envision development on what's now the Covell Village proposal site.
So it was in that plan?
It was in that plan.
Even though it's not part of the city, it was in the plan?
As were portions of West Davis, portions of South Davis, the vision was that they would be annexed upon development.
Right.
And so several subdivisions in other areas of town were also shown on the map, have subsequently been developed, but they've been developed in the city because
the
part
city
of that,
them.
They annexed
okay.
them.
All right. Well, I think we've beaten that one pretty well, don't you think? I mean, we got that pretty clear.
We got that pretty clear.
Yeah.
Couple sentences on what happens if we don't.
What happens if we don't what?
If we cannot demonstrate that we meet our fair share, then the State Department of Housing and Community Development is not going to certify our housing element because that's part of the general plan where we have to demonstrate that we can accommodate our fair share for housing. That means that under current law, some of our ability to seek affordable housing funds is threatened. If it's anything competitive, then we probably would not be able to get affordable housing plans. For some jurisdictions that don't want affordable housing, they don't want housing in general, the fact that they can't get money to build affordable housing is not a big penalty. Davis, we do have a very aggressive affordable housing program, and that would hurt. It's not clear what else could happen from the state standpoint if we don't meet our housing needs. It does make it harder for us to deny a development proposal. If somebody comes in and wants to build housing and it's not a location where we want housing to be built, it's harder for us to say no if we can't show that we already have the ability, that we don't need that housing.
I see. And would we again run the risk of having the county develop something on our doorstep?
That's where you mentioned the pass-through agreement.
Well, yeah, because I've been here long enough that I remember that whole thing about why we have that giant East Davis addendum.
Yes.
and that whole thing. And then there was an agreement. For those of you who weren't here, can you put this in politically neutral terms in two sentences?
I don't think I can. Because I wasn't working for the city and I don't know the technical. I will try.
A developer wished to develop a whole lot of houses on the east edge of Davis. The city of Davis turned him down. He went to the county. The county said, sure, why not? And then the city said, so the county was going to do it if the city didn't let him in. So the city was sort of forced to accept a development that it hadn't originally wanted.
Right. The pass-through agreement has two provisions for growth. One of them has to do with how the city will grow. And the pass-through agreement, which is an agreement with Yolo County that says the city will pass through a portion of its property tax revenues to the county, says that the city will also maintain a 1.78% growth rate during a certain period of time.
And has that time ended?
The time has not ended, but we've built enough units that we've met the threshold. So even though it went to 2010, we've issued enough building permits that it's no longer a factor in any of the calculations. The other thing it says is that if the county approves urban development in the area around the city will stop making those pass-through payments, which are right now about $1.5 million a year.
So it's unlikely that the county would try and force a development that the Davis didn't want?
They wouldn't do it for something that wasn't really lucrative.
Okay. All right. Bill Emlin has walked in. Thank you for joining us, Bill. And what we've been doing is talking about how the growth is regulated. We've gone through all the SACOG business, and she was explaining what would happen if we just didn't build anymore. And so that's where we were, and we've sort of done that question, I think, sufficiently, don't you?
If people got the answer of we're not really sure, then we've done it well.
We've done it well. Okay. So let's look at the next question. And what would you like to tell us about next?
Now that Bill's walked in, we might want to talk about the city's local growth policies. Or do you think we've just beaten growth to death?
No. We need to know as much information as we can so we can make valid decisions. So tell us about the Davis growth policies.
Well, the Davis growth policies are, I'd have to say, fairly complex in some ways. There's multiple layers of policies that affect growth issues in the city. I think we've evolved those a bit over the last few years. Obviously, right now, one of the big ones that we're looking at is this concept of establishing a 1% growth cap or limitation. Or target, I should say. I know we don't like to put it in that connotation. We actually would like to call it a target for yearly growth, annual growth rate. It's been discussed a lot at the city council as part of our growth management plan, and it's something that's continuing to evolve.
And when you say a 1% annual growth rate, do you mean the actual number of units built?
That's correct. It's 1% of the total number of units in the city.
And are we building 1% of the units?
The last couple of years, we've been getting pretty close to that number. Roughly, it equates to about 250 to 260 units per year. And we've been pretty close to that target for the last two or three years. Obviously, in the late 90s and early 2000s, we were growing at a faster pace. We were closer to issuing somewhere in the range of 400 to 500 permits a year, and some years even a little bit more during that phase of the growth cycle.
Okay, and we have a lot of things that are in the wings that are being developed, haven't been built yet. Do you count them when they're built? Do you count them when they're approved? How does that work?
What we're currently looking at is sort of a multifaceted program. Primarily, we base it on when building permits are issued. That's when construction.
And this is only for new housing.
That's correct, for new housing. And then, but we're also monitoring the other entitlements that have been granted, but construction hasn't actually been started. We find that's an important component of it in terms of the overall management system. Obviously, if you're just basing on building permits, you can end up accumulating a lot of potential units, and we want to avoid the sort of the boom-bust cycle that we saw in the past. And so we want to do a better job of monitoring any entitlements that haven't been initiated yet.
Okay, we're going to take a very, very short musical interlude here while I rearrange a few microphones. So here you go. Have some fun listening, and I'll be right back. Okay, and we're back. This is Lois Richter. The show is That's Life, and we're talking with Catherine Hess and Bill Emlin from the City of Davis to try and give us some background material so that you will have good information to use when you're asking questions about whether or not to approve the Covale Village project, which is on the ballot. The next thing I want to ask about is the traffic. And traffic has been a topic of concern for years in the city. And there's a number of things that are referred to that are quite confusing. One is level of service. So I'm going to ask Catherine to please explain to us about level of service, what that means, give us some examples, and like that.
Okay. And there's two different kinds of level of service, both of which use the same A through F scale, which doesn't help. So what we need to keep in mind is sometimes we're talking about intersection level of service, and sometimes we're talking about segment level of service.
What's a segment?
A segment is the roadway in between the intersections.
Okay.
So outside where we are right here, we've got an intersection at L Street and 5th, and then we've got an intersection at
5th and Poline.
Both of those are intersections. In between those two intersections on 5th Street itself is a segment.
Okay. So using this as an example, and for those of you who aren't familiar with it, that's from between the post office down to the PG&E Courtyard, I guess it's called. And the little, yeah. Anyway, okay. So it's that road.
Yes.
And the level of service on those would be measured either at the intersection or at the segment.
Right.
Do they have any relationship to each other, or are they measured separately?
They're measured separately, and they use completely different methodologies.
Okay.
For most of what we do, we look at the intersections.
Okay.
And that's the way it's done most areas. An intersection analysis for level of service has to do with how long the average person waits in order to get through the intersection.
Okay.
And you can have a level of service that varies over the day.
So what's the A through F thing? It's a time thing, right?
It's a time thing. If the average delay is less than 10 seconds, you're at level of service A.
Okay.
If the average delay is greater than 80 seconds at an intersection, then you're at level of service F.
Wait a minute. 80 seconds? That's a minute. A minute and a third.
Mm-hmm. That means you're sitting there as it goes through a cycle. This is for signalized intersections. And there's
level of F is a minute. Good grief. I thought level F was going to be something like waiting for 10 minutes to get through the intersection or going through three or four cycles or something.
That would also be level of service F. We don't have an F minus and an F minus minus.
Oh, my goodness.
Although they are talking about basically embellishing the system to start looking at differing levels of F just because of traffic in some of the urbanized areas now. It's evolving into something more complex.
F1, F2, F3. Okay, so level of service F, where an average wait would be a minute and a quarter or a minute and a third, what intersections in the city of Davis are level of service F?
I don't believe we have any right now. The intersection at 1st, E, and Richards, the one just coming out of the tunnel.
It's a five-way thing, so of course you got to wait a little longer.
It's pretty complicated. It's ugly. It was at level of service F before we put in the free right turn.
Uh-huh.
We have not measured it since.
Okay.
So it may have gotten better. We also have...
But that's with more than two roads. It's in multiple intersections.
Yes, it is.
Okay, that's the same... Whether it's – no matter how many roads it is, it's one – okay.
Right. It has to
minute and a third.
With the average delay. There are two areas in the Olive and Richards intersection.
Uh-huh.
The intersection itself does not operate at LOSF. However
– unless you're on Olive Drive attempting to turn left going south.
Bingo.
I've been there.
In the a.m. peak hour, if you're northbound and you're trying to make a left turn, that particular leg of the intersection is at LOSF.
So this level of service is by different lane at different times in different – this is really complicated.
Most of the time we don't look at the individual leg of an intersection.
Yeah.
We just look at the intersection as a whole and what the average delays are.
Okay.
Do you want to go on to segments?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, okay. Well, no. First, I want to find out what's the worst intersections that we have in the city?
That would be First E and Richards is the worst intersection.
Okay, and then the Olive Drive
And Richards. Those two are the top.
Yeah. Okay. All right, and then segments.
Okay.
Sure. Why not?
All right. LOSF for a segment or any of the levels of service don't have anything to do with how long the delays are.
Uh-huh.
The level of service for a segment is based on how many trips there are over a 24-hour period compared to how many trips you think you ought to be able to accommodate in a street that wide.
Says who?
Says the institute.
No, I mean, you said how many trips you think you ought to be able to accommodate.
Right.
Who's determining how many trips you should ought to be able to accommodate?
The 2000 Highway Capacity Manual says that, again, using the street out here, if it's a four-lane road, which this is, if there are more than 24,000 trips during a 24-hour period, it's at level of service C. If there are more than 32,000 trips, it's at level of service D. And if there are more than 33,800 trips, it's at level of service E. Now, what's a little goofy is there's nothing in that analysis that says when those trips are occurring.
So if they're spread out all across the day and have a nice even flow, never have
probably
a slowdown, never have a stop, nothing. Or if they're all at, you know, the half hour are coming and going.
Then it's going to be really ugly.
And
you're going to come up with the same score.
Oh, that's silly. This level of service stuff isn't really telling us anything.
The intersection does.
Yeah.
In part because it focuses on what's really happening to the driver.
But it's averaging it over the day.
No, not the intersection. The intersection is looking at over a 15-minute period.
So a level of service where I have to wait for a minute and a half is a level of service F.
Mm-hmm.
And that intersection is marked level of service F, even if that condition only exists for half an hour?
Yes.
Well, then every school, in every intersection in the city that has a school at it probably is at an F at some point.
Well, most of those don't have traffic lights, so we have a different standard on
traffic
those.
Lights. This is only traffic lights.
Right. If you don't have a traffic light, then we have a different level of service definition, because a lot of times what that's based on is whether if you're on a side street, you can get onto the main street.
Okay.
So you're looking at something different.
Okay. The city recently changed the signaling on 5th Street at F and at G, and it put in protected left turns and changed that thing. And they made it a longer wait so that the pedestrians could get across easier.
So if you get there at the wrong time.
Does that mean that the level of service at that intersection has now gone down?
It could be the case.
Even though it's a much nicer intersection because you're not having to – it's much safer because you aren't having to dodge the oncoming cars to turn left, and the left turn people aren't having to wait for three or four cycles to get through.
Well, see, if they were waiting for three or four cycles, then that took care of our average, and it may be that because they're not waiting, even though everybody else is waiting a little longer, your level of service didn't change.
Oh,
we haven't measured it. I don't know.
How often are the signal light intersections measured?
We do some periodically. Just how are we doing measurements? I think more often it's because we've got something that's going on and we want to make sure we have an accurate
situation. So the measurement is triggered by a problem rather than it being you're going to do five every year and just rotates around?
I don't know the answer to that one, Lois.
Okay, we'll put that in for homework.
Sounds good.
Okay. All right. What is the level of service at Poline and Covell? She's flipping pages. You can't see it, but I can hear it.
Lois, while Catherine's doing that, I'll just make a quick comment in terms of traffic engineering, it's not a perfect science. I know folks would like to have – there are no absolutes. There's a lot of assumptions that are made, and it's amazing how much results can change based on changes and assumptions. And so I think it's a good tool to help decision makers make thoughtful decisions about these very difficult issues. But I think if folks just want to try to basically glom on to something like these level of service standards and use those as the sole way of evaluating traffic issues, I think they may be disappointed that it doesn't provide that holistic approach.
Right, right.
And I found it.
Oh, good.
The Pauline and Covell intersection right now has a signal. It is operating at level of service C in the morning peak and level of service C in the evening peak. There is a 22.8 second average delay in the morning and a 25 second average delay in the evening.
And that is for everybody going every direction?
Yes.
When was that taken?
This number was part of the traffic analysis that was done with the Covell Village EIR. So it was done
recently. And then there's going to be a question about the level of service is scheduled to go to F if Covell Village goes through. Now, I don't know if you know the answers to this, but what's that about?
The environmental impact report, which for those of you who aren't complete policy wonks, is a document that looks at the potential environmental consequences of a proposed project. And that could be a construction project like Covell Village proposal. It could be a policy change. We did an EIR for the general plan update in 2000. The EIR is a disclosure document. The intention is to make sure that the public and the decision makers know what the impacts will be. Mm-hmm. And where feasible, identify mitigation measures. Okay. But an EIR doesn't say you can't do something that will harm the environment. It just says if you're going to do it, you need to know.
Yeah, this is what we expect will happen if you do X.
And you've got to be willing to say, we know it's going to do this.
Right.
We want to do it anyway.
So this document came through and said, we think level of service is going to be what?
It said that if you don't do any mitigation measure, you're going to have level of service F at the intersections of Pauline and Covell, Covell and L, Pauline and Picasso, Pauline and Donner. But if you add a left turn lane to the intersection of Pauline and Covell, if you add a signal to Covell and L, if you put a signal in at the intersection of if you put a signal in at the intersection of Picasso and Pauline, and you put a signal or a roundabout in at the intersection of Donner and Pauline, then you can reduce those impacts so they will no longer be level of service F.
So it would be a D or an E or an
D
a C
or, e
or something.
Within acceptable standards, that's the intersections.
Right.
The EIR also said that the segments on, particularly on Pauline Road, would be at level of service F.
And that's because Pauline north of Covell is a two-lane road instead of a four-lane road.
As is Pauline south of Covell.
Right.
And the city has previously said over and over, we're not going to widen Pauline south
of Covell. But north of Covell, it could be widened.
North of Covell, it could be widened.
Okay.
So the EIR says, and if you widen Pauline north of Covell, then your problem goes away.
Okay.
You could widen technically, theoretically, south of Covell.
But the city's not going to do that because the city's promised it wouldn't.
So therefore, you've got a level of service F on Pauline, south of Covell.
Okay.
Significant, unavoidable.
Okay. And level of service F in a segment simply talks about the number of trips per day.
Compared to
not to what... how what the quality of your flow is or what the timing of the trips are or anything else. Does EIR give any more information about that? In other words, does it say we expect we to have rush hour traffic at this time or we expect it'll be spread out? Does it give any more details?
It gives a little more detail on exactly how many trips are projected, where they're going to be coming from, where it's going to be going. But in terms of for the segments, what it's going to feel like, no.
So reading the EIR for one of our listeners wouldn't give you a whole lot more information.
No. The one other thing when we talked about comparison, we only have, to our knowledge, one level of service F segment in town.
And that is?
That is the tunnel itself at Richards.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's the tunnel and the up and the down, but it's the portion of Richards between the two intersections at Olive and at First.
Oh, right, because that's a two-lane segment, and it goes to four lanes immediately south of there.
It's a two-lane segment, and it has
immediately
more than 17,000 trips per day.
Right. Okay. How many thousand trips was it planned for the south of Poland? Do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head. I got it here in the book.
Okay. Well, that's that book is about 3 inches thick, folks.
And the book has 4 volumes, and all of it is on the city's webpage.
Wow. All 4 volumes?
Yes.
Oh, my.
www.cityofdavis.org. And you can either do /Covell, or you can, from the cityofdavis.org page, there are at least 3 links that will take you to the Covell pages. There's a tab for environmental documents. There's also staff reports for all the commissions, minutes for all the commissions, and the final actions that were taken by the council.
Okay, great. Well, I think that sort of covers level of service, though that's a very confusing. You know, before we got here, I thought I knew a lot more. And now that you've explained it, I realize that I don't know if I'm going to be sitting there for a minute and a half or 10 minutes. So one wouldn't know. But it does sound as though the intersection level of service is taken care of in the plan.
Yes.
So the only level of service F left, if the plan went through and took care of all the mitigation, would be because the city would not widen the pole line south of Covell because of prior commitments, correct?
And Covell Boulevard itself.
And Covell Boulevard itself.
The same prior commitments. We won't go to a 6-lane road.
Right. Now, Covell Boulevard wasn't level of service F, though. You said the only segment was that pole line road segment.
Let me double check that one.
Okay. But well, we'll come back to that if you find out. We've only got 15 minutes left.
Ooh.
So, it's a little tight, isn't it? Okay, I wanted to get to a number of other things. I was going to ask you a lot about fire stations, but then I read a fantastic article in the paper that explained all of it. So for my listeners out there, go get a copy of the Davis Enterprise and find the article about the fire stations, and it will explain what we need, when we need it, why we need it, and all that other stuff. And so that's an excellent base, and so I'm not even going to ask you that question. I will, however, ask you the question about the other utilities, the sewage and the water and the, you know, stuff like that. So who wants to field this one? Bill, are you up for it, or Kathleen? Catherine.
Okay. He can kick me if I'm wrong.
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh. I was waiting for a question.
Okay. What is the situation currently with our wastewater treatment and our sewage treatment? Do we have enough capacity right now for what we have in the city of Davis? How soon will we need more if there is not this particular project in the offing? And will having this particular project force us to get an additional sewage treatment plant that we would not otherwise have needed?
Yes, the city does have enough capacity in its sewer treatment plant to cover projected development that is already part of what we would think would be coming soon, some sort of redevelopment on the ConAgra site, possibly some redevelopment on the PG&E site, the vacant lands out in East Davis. We also have capacity for additional dwelling units, such as might be provided through Covell Village.
Or some other alternate project if this one doesn't pass.
Correct.
So we're covered for now.
We're covered.
But
we're covered for now on the capacity side of things.
Uh-huh.
We also have a problem with the quality of the processes in the wastewater treatment plant.
We existingly right now today have a problem.
Correct.
And whether or not we have Covell Village, yes or no, is still we're going to have a problem.
We are not meeting current standards for discharge.
Okay. So that means that the city is in the process of figuring out ways to fix it?
Yes.
Okay.
Those ways are not going to be cheap.
Uh-huh.
That's the way it is. Public Works is doing what they can. Mm-hmm. We're doing it. We're beginning environmental review of the upgrades to the plant that will be needed to address the quality issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have a lot more conversation with the community about what we do and how we pay for it.
Okay. Now, is there anything about Covell Village that affects any of either what you said or what you're going to say here about this stuff?
I'd say 2 things. One of them is we do have a fixed capacity plant.
Mm-hmm.
If Covell Village is approved and there are people in Covell Village, they will be using a portion of the remaining capacity of the plant. Mm-hmm. It won't jeopardize our ability to do any of the other plans that we have in place right now. But that is using part of the capacity.
Everybody uses part of the capacity.
Everybody uses part of the capacity. The other thing, when you look at the need for upgrading the plant, and I think it's a minor impact, but you're dividing the cost among that many more people.
So we have a few more people to spread the cost over, but that's city services, and everybody's going to pay for city services. So with them, the existing residents might pay a little bit less than they did, but it's going to be minor.
It's not something I would count on.
Okay. And Bill, did you have anything to add on this topic?
I just had a couple comments. One, in terms of what the city is going through, what we're going through right now is not unique. There's a number of other cities that have been affected by the recent changes in the State Water Quality Control Board's standard and the level of tertiary treatment that's required.
So it's the fact that the standard changed that we're out of compliance, not that our plant has suddenly gone bad.
Right. Like I say, we're not the loner out there. Uh-huh. The city of Vacaville is going through this, and several other cities in the region. So it is a challenge, and there's a lot of debate in terms of whether or not there's justification for the level that's being required, but obviously by science it is something that by law we're going to have to comply with, and that's what the city is currently engaged in doing in terms of looking at our alternatives. The other thing I want to note, maybe you've mentioned it earlier, but part of the reason that we have capacity in the plant for Covo Village is because when the original plant was designed and constructed, it was based on the 1987 general plan, at which time Covo Village was part of Covo, as well as the Nishi property, which is still not part of our general plan now. It was taken out in 2001.
Okay. Is there in the Covo Village plans any plan for doing any treatment? Were they going to have like a secondary treatment or any treatments happening in Covell Village itself?
Not for the sewer.
For the sewer. Anything else?
Storm drainage.
Storm drainage.
We've got the standard ponds that are now becoming customary in all of our subdivisions. They're also looking at some additional storm drainage functions to improve the quality and channel the water that's going to be coming off of the rains.
Okay. So when you say the ponds are standard, you mean like North Davis Pond and West Davis Pond?
Yes.
Oh, wow. That's neat. I mean, that's not standard where I live. I've lived in East Davis and South Davis. We don't have those.
You do too. You've got one in the Core Pond.
It's not South Davis.
It's in East Davis.
Not really. Okay. So anything else about utility capacity? We've done fire, sewer, water. Okay. What were my other questions? She's got the list.
Say railroad tracks.
Oh, that's a big one for me. The railroad tracks. Would the city be permitted to have a grade crossing road coming from the development across the railroad tracks to F Street?
There are several hurdles. One of the biggest is the California Public Utilities Commission that does not like at-grade crossings. And I don't know whether you're talking about at-grade or grade-separate at this point. It's very, very difficult to get approval for an at-grade crossing. You essentially, as I understand it, have to close one somewhere else. And there is
you mean
a
like 4th Street? And 4th Street, 2nd Street, 3rd Street, 5th Street, those are all grade crossings, right?
Yes.
It just grows, the road just goes across the tracks, kaboomity-boomity-boom.
Right.
Okay, and we can't do that out there.
It'd be very, very difficult, very, very expensive, and
that's what I thought you were going to say.
Potentially impossible.
Yeah, there's a drainage ditch next to it. I have heard that precludes doing an undercrossing because you can't divert that there. So that makes that one essentially impossible. Is that accurate?
Well, drainage can be diverted. You can move a ditch. We've moved ditches in town. A bigger problem for either an undercrossing or an overcrossing has to do with what happens on the other side.
F Street, you have to jump across and land in somebody's yard.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's problematic.
Okay. So the short answer, and I'm sorry I'm speeding you up, but I'm looking at the clock going, we're short on time here. The short answer is across an exit from Covell Village to F Street is basically not going to happen.
It was concluded that it just wasn't feasible.
Okay. A north-south road is Poline Road. Mm-hmm. Internally in the project, there are north-south roads. What about an east-west road across the top of it as an exit for the people coming out? Is that in there, out of there, not?
There are exits to Poline Road. Mm-hmm. There would be four intersections at Picasso, at Donner, at Moore, and then a new one at the north end of the subdivision.
Okay.
There are some connections that go from the east and the west. Part of our difficulty whenever we look at a site plan for a subdivision is trying to figure out where the roads go through and getting the most connectivity for the roads while providing our green belts and minimizing the conflicts between
and having residents that can have nice little cul-de-sacs that don't go anyplace. Yeah. Okay. What else was it that we wanted to cover? I know there was – I'm sorry that we just don't have enough time today.
But Measure J itself.
Yes. What is it we're voting on? Are we voting on whether or not to have growth? No. I know that part.
You're voting on primarily the change in the general plan designation on the property. Currently, the property is designated for agricultural land uses. And with the proposal, the change would be to urban land uses, the mix of urban land uses that you see on the plan. So you're basically voting on that change to the general plan. You're also voting on the master plan of the project, in a sense, which goes along with that, as well as what are called baseline project features, which are the key aspects of the project that basically there's a commitment being made to the voters that these things are going to happen with this particular project.
So we're voting on the overarching plan, but not the fine details of little tiny things.
Yeah, that's been something we really struggled with in terms of defining baseline features, because we know it's important that we lock in certain things, because that's what the expectation will be of the community. At the same time, we're looking at a project that's a 10-year-plus project build-out, and there's a lot of variables out there that we can't anticipate right now. There's just naturally going to be some changes that will be required in the future. And so trying to find that balancing act has been one of the things that we spent a lot of time with in sort of defining the project for the Measure J process.
Okay. And on the city's website, there is the information about exactly what the voters are voting on. Now, I want to make sure that we're clear on what they're not voting on. It is not a vote on whether or not the city will add growth, add housing. It's only a vote on whether or not this project and this property will be added to the city and go forward. Is that correct?
It's correct, although I would say that, yes, we are voting to add housing in the sense that currently that we do not have a general plan designation on that property that allows for housing. So we are adding a certain increment of additional housing over our current capacity.
Yes. But it is – If this is turned down, it doesn't stop housing happening elsewhere that is already part of the city. If the development were to occur within the current city limits, then it would occur without this kind of a vote. The only reason we're having this is because this is outside the city limits, correct?
It's more than outside the city limits. It's a property that's designated for agricultural use, and we're talking about making it urban. And, yes, as far as the other properties in the city goes, they could build out under their designations. And again, some of that will get back to the 1% that I mentioned earlier, the 1% growth target per year will have an impact on how fast some of those other sites build out.
If this site is approved, and you say it's a 10-year project, I assume it doesn't get approved till 2007, so they're building through 2017. The number of units in it, would that be 17% of the city? In other words, 1% per year would be 17% for 17 years. 10% for 10 years. Would we still be at about the 1% per year?
Cova Village would not be all of the 1% per year.
It would be less than 1% per year.
Some of it depends on when the affordable housing comes online, some things like that. Mm-hmm. We have a phasing requirement in the development agreement that says no more than 175 units per year. And there's a schedule. It starts at 175 and then goes down after that. That can get building permits, period. Now, that exempts the affordable housing. It exempts the units that are upstairs in the village center, which is the commercial area. It's similar to the 1% per year that has some exemptions for affordable housing for mixed-use projects.
Okay, great. I want to thank you both for coming down. Is there anything last? We have like 30 seconds. Any last thing that we need to say? Go to the website.
Go to the website.
Go to the website.
www.cityofdavis.org/Covell.
Thank you so much. For my listeners, please tune in next week and the week after that, where we have the proponents and opponents. And then tune in the fourth week, and we will answer some of these questions that have come up that we haven't been able to answer before. So I got my homework. You got your homework. I'll see you next week, 1 o'clock Thursday.